So you're pooped on. There's really nothing you can.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Hey.
Hey. How's it going?
Beautiful.
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. So the first thing we've got this week is a little bit of follow-up. Intel, I guess, has started their marketing campaign against Apple's M1 chips or Apple Silicon in general. So they got Justin Long and a couple, they have like three or four 30-second videos that are pretty cringeworthy comparing Intel PCs versus Macs. Did y'all get a chance to see any of this or any of these?
All of them.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. I don't know where to start. I want to be like, good job, Intel. Go get them. But this was, I think, a misfire.
Yeah, I mean, first, like, getting Justin Long, like, I mean, I guess the I'm a Mac PC ads that Apple had where Justin Long was the Mac and, what's his name? Crap, what is his name? It was the PC.
Talking about the Dell dude? No.
It was John Hodgman. So John Hodgman was the PC and Justin Long was the Mac. And so I guess, you know, that ad campaign was pretty impactful in pop culture. But the fact that Intel like got Justin Long and he's like, I'm a Justin, just a normal guy. Like, it's very.
Didn't Apple get Hodgman recently to do something? He was like in a brief when something launched. I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was actually the Apple Silicon. So at the end of the Apple Silicon event, they had Hodgman like come out like he was a PC. I don't remember exactly what he did, but it was just like a little stinger, like kind of like an after the credits type thing.
So it sounds like this is kind of a response to that a little bit too, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, it's very cringy. Like, I'm just a I'm just a PC or I'm just a Mac. But no. I'm just Justin. I'm just a guy. And then they like proceed to have like bad photoshops of like everything where his thumbs get cut off by like some trackpad display.
Which that computer is really cool.
Well, that may be, but like if you're going to come out and try to like smack talk, like put a little bit more money in your budget so that your Photoshop or Premiere Pro guys don't like cut Justin Long's fingers off. Adam, being the token PC guy here, you're always giving me a hard time about Macs, jokingly. What'd you think?
I mean, like, if you're giving credit two different directions on it, so yes, they're cringy, they're bad, they're not really. I guess the thing is like, if you're someone who knows anything about PCs, if you're someone who knows anything about Apple, this commercial isn't really like going to change your mind on anything. You are who you are and you like what you like. I mean, are they pointing out things that are real? Yeah. I mean, there's things that just PC does that Macs don't. But normally if you're a Mac person, it's because you have those niches that you enjoy, in my opinion, or you just like simplicity.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who this ad is for, because it's almost like, so the I'm a Mac PC ads were the switcher campaign where Apple was proactively trying to get people who bought PCs to switch to Mac. This was during the iPod heyday and they had, you know, they were getting momentum. So this one almost feels like an anti-switcher like campaign saying like, oh, hey, like, I know you've probably heard a lot of good things about Macs, but like, look at all these like different things that PCs can do. Don't switch But like you said, I'm not sure who this is for, because the people that know, I think it's for people who just don't know what they want. Because the people that know that they want a PC are going to buy a PC because they want, you know, the versatility, or they have some like niche feature or functionality that they want their PC to do that Apple doesn't offer. And the people that buy Macs with intent know what they're purchasing. And so there's nothing that a PC could offer that Apple offers. So it's very strange.
Yeah, it was geared towards, in my opinion, power users. Like, okay, 3 or 4 monitors, you're not going to have a standard person wanting to do that. Gaming, you're not going to have the standard person buying the laptops doing that. The only one that I've seen that was kind of like the back and forth a little bit on was the laptops that turn into a tablet. Okay, that's kind of on a regular consumer base, but all the rest of them are, to me, power users.
And see, and that's what I mean, like, a power user already knows
right
what they're going to buy. So this ad was pointless. And if it was for people who are on the fence and like, I don't know, maybe like my mom or somebody is like, oh, I just want to get a, you know, a new computer. And, you know, she comes to me and it's like, oh, you know, what about these Apple computers? Tell me about them or whatever. And maybe she sees this ad and says, oh no, look at all these things these PCs can do. I'm going to get one of those. But all the arguments, like you said, were for like power uses, and she doesn't care about that. Like 2-3 monitors, I don't care. Which, that's a little bit of a disingenuous argument, because Apple computers can have multiple monitors. It's just that these new M1 chips only support one monitor, but their pro machines that they're going to come out with are going to support more than one monitor. They did before. And the gaming thing, like gamers just going to buy a PC because they know that they're not going to play games on a Mac. So it's just, yeah, it was a very like toothless ad campaign where it was just kind of corny and didn't really do anything. And what's also cringy about it is, like, on the high end, Intel's not the best. Like, if you want some giant, like, beastie CPU that can rip through a bunch of video or Photoshop, you're not gonna get an Intel machine. You're gonna get one of those like Threadripper AMD chips. And the same thing with gaming. Like, they've had, you know, consistent better gaming performance. Intel's getting beat, like, from the common chip, which is Apple, to the like high-end niche stuff, which is AMD. Just bad look.
I mean, I'm still biased to Intel personally, but I think whenever you get into the very micro level of technology of who's better than who, it's not that big of a note for someone like, okay, I play video games. All right. So you're really not going to see, in my opinion, a noticeable difference between those high and lows, in my opinion.
Right. And then the people who do care, like I said, are going to be doing like video editing or, things that are going to tax multiple CPUs, and you can get better chips from AMD. But it was just weird that Intel was like fighting for the sake of PC when Intel isn't just the PC. I don't know. I'm kind of getting off the rails here, but it was a bad ad.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. They're like, if they're fighting for PC, they're fighting for everyone that's sitting in that market of PC. It's just singling out Apple, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then on top of it all, I think their new, I think it was their new CEO, after this ad campaign came out, they were talking about like, oh, hopefully Apple, you know, would maybe come back and let us fab their chips, because it came out, I think, last week or so that Intel is going to be opening up their fab to third party for the first time. So they'll be fabricating other people's chip designs like TSMC does. The issue is Intel is so far behind who wants to use them as a chip fab. But yeah, anyway. They burn Apple, and then they're like, hey, I'm just kidding a little bit. Why don't you come and let us build your chips? Because we need the money.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all shapes up. I mean, we've covered the whole Intel changes and things like that. So hopefully this is just a misstep and not like the, you know, the signpost of things to come.
Yeah, I'm rooting for them. I want them to, you know, make a comeback, but this ad was just gross, and they need to come out, and you know, the proof is in the pudding. So like, they need to come out with something in the next couple of years that's going to show us that they're making a turnaround. Otherwise, it's going to be a slow death for Intel, I think.
I think the days of PC versus Mac advertisement is kind of just, it's overdone. There's really no point anymore. I think it even comes that way when you talk about console wars and stuff like that. It's overdone anymore. PS5 fighting against the Xbox Series X or Nintendo. I mean, they all have their uniqueness to them. They all have their specialties. Just capitalize on that and quit trying to be like the whole "they suck, we're great" thing that people are going to gravitate to out of the side.
Yeah, it's an us versus them thing too. And yeah, I agree with you, Adam. Like, you know, I love my Macs, and before I had one, I wanted one for a long time. But right next to me, I have a gaming PC that I built myself with a 3080 in it, and I play games on it, and it runs Windows, and you know, it's fine. But I use it for games. I don't use it for my day-to-day work machine. But some people do, and that's fine. I don't care. I don't care what you use, but I like what I like.
It's like a toolbox almost, right? You know, you're going to pull out the tool. It makes sense for whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah. But so speaking of Windows and Microsoft, they're starting to reopen some offices.
Yep, it looks like seems like one of the larger companies that are starting to get more of a hybrid approach starting. As more vaccines are rolled out, as restrictions, you know, can lessen because of declining cases and positivity rates, Microsoft is in. So they have and we'll link to the show notes in the show notes this page, but they have like a six phase state or six stage opening, and they're at level four, which is it says around 20. I forget, it doesn't say like a number, I guess, of the overall people, but it's so they're in stage four. It's called a soft open, basically allowing some employees to come back, and the hope is to you know, start to get people to more of a hybrid approach with in the offices that, you know, they're in 21 different countries. And so as more vaccines roll out and restrictions lighten, they'll just continue through their phases to where then they're fully open in all their offices to whatever capacity that they had before. But it does bring up an interesting topic, I would say, as far as a lot of people, and they've done a survey, are not wanting to be fully back in the office. They want to have that hybrid approach to their work. And that's not just with Microsoft. I think Microsoft is one of the larger organizations that this is happening to. But as they've you know, polled their employees, the majority of them want to have that flexible schedule. In fact, in this particular study, Microsoft found that 73% of their employees want to have that flexibility of remote work, which I think is a trend we're going to see, you know, throughout. I mean, we're seeing it at my company for sure. I'm sure, well, aside from Ryan, who is a hybrid worker.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm part human, part robot.
I think the trend's definitely picking up. I think as the world has changed with COVID, it was kind of an eye-opener, I think, for a lot of businesses that thought they couldn't have their employees be at home. or they couldn't handle their employees being at home. And it ended up being a surprise for a lot of them, like, hey, this does work. It can work. It doesn't work for everyone, but, you know, it's possible. Now, granted, there's a lot of things that come into risk factors and such of people being at home, but I think this community of how it's changed is going to stay that way. It's just, it'll reduce, like, whenever the shots are out and COVID becomes a little bit more of a subtle thing, some are going to rebuck back and be like, no, I want people back in office. But I think for the most part, yeah, the society as a whole is probably going to change towards flexible being remote.
Yeah. And I hope it stays that way because I mean, I don't like going in the office. I can understand like why some people might want to go into the office, leaving the valid or not business reasons aside, but personal reasons like, I don't have a place to work at home or whatever. Besides that, I don't know why you would want to not work remote. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I've noticed over the last year, so many more opportunities have been open to me, to work at different places that wouldn't have even talked to me before because you had to be on campus. You could not live in another state. You needed to be in the office because whatever. And I think that hurts businesses. And I don't think they realized it before, but it hurts them because they lose on the pool of employees that they have access to. They only have access to the employees that live in their area. And I've seen that reflected in the pay scales that are offered as well. And what I'm kind of afraid of is that if remote work stays an option for the majority, where it was kind of frowned upon and only, the select small group of companies were open to it. I hope that the pay scales for these companies adjust to a global pay scale as opposed to you live in Louisville. You live in Kentucky, and so that means that you get paid $60,000 less than this person who does the exact same job but lives in San Francisco. That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, sure, my cost of living is different, but if your city's so expensive that you have to pay people more to live there, then maybe you shouldn't hire people there. Maybe you should hire people remote. And, pay an average rate to everybody and not like pay less to people who are geographically different than where your company is. I think it's win-win if you get a bigger pool of employees and those employees are feel just as valued as employees that live in a big city somewhere.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with the talent pool. And in that study, it bears out for sure. Like your talent pool now expands. And so you're able to hire from anywhere. As soon as you adopt this flexible model, you can hire from anywhere and get people who are just as qualified, if not more, for your company. But maybe they live in a place where like, you know what, I live by my family. I don't want to move. And this works really good for me. And I'm going to work just as hard, if not harder, because, you're willing to allow me to live here with, my family system, my community that I've, invested in. I have a happier life because of that, those kinds of things that are good for like the workers' health that only increase their productivity, and I think that's exactly right. To then, if all of those things equal greater output from the employee, then sure, like we should be paying more on an average scale than just a You know, well, it's higher here by, you know, X percent just because cost of living is X percent higher. Like, I don't think that should be, you know, the driving factor. I think, yeah, it has to be a factor, right? Because you can't like have a home base and pay, and say you're in San Francisco and pay poverty level. Like, you don't want to do that to people. But you also can't just, you know, cheat people who, just because they live in the Midwest, you know, are then, you know, a lot less, and they could just work at some local company for making the same thing. It's like, no, I want to work for you. You're a large corporation. Like, I want to invest in that. So,
but that's the counter argument a little bit on that one. So if you did a globalized price, let's say 80,000 was the running for a specific position, that would be like an average set. But you talk about health of living with family and such of that nature and being able to afford that without being poverty level. If you did live in San Francisco, your family's there, you don't really have a support system to leave that area. But now the job that you did have was all averaged out, which would greatly reduce compared to everywhere else, right? Then you're in that level of like, I have to move, I got to leave my support system, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that there's the other side of it, right? It would be a pretty big impact to those who are. And then the other flip of it would be, so if I'm hiring in Idaho and I'm trying to find a specific engineer, you know, your pool may be like 4 or 5, right? But then you open it up to all of the US. Okay. Well, now those 4 or 5 people are competing with everybody. Then now the credentials to have the job becomes extremely important just to narrow down the amount of applicants. So yeah, you better have that bachelor's, or, oh, about 90% of everybody who applied for this had their master's. So you better have a master's. Oh, well, about 90% of everybody has the cert or that cert. Okay, well, now you got to have that at least to be filtered in, to be talked to learn who your personality is. So that's the only thing is.
Yeah. I agree with your first part about like living in a place that's more expensive. But your second argument, I don't agree with at all, because that's a meritocracy. You get paid for what you've got. And so if a company wants to pay, a company wants to get their best employees they possibly can, right? So if you're the 4 or 5 people living in Idaho that would have normally just got that job because you're the most qualified person, but now you're competing globally. You're competing globally. I mean, that's the way that America is supposed to be run, right? Everything is what you do for yourself and what you try to strive for. So if if that job is, too difficult for you to get because there's other better qualified people that company is willing to pay, well, that's just the way it is. I mean, if you don't know anything about engineering, or you didn't go to school for, to be an engineer, you know, a lot of times you can't just apply to be an engineer. Like, I can't apply to be a rocket scientist. I got an engineering degree, but, you know, it's, I'm being a little facetious, but, everybody is competing anyway. It's just that right now, the people who, are positioned geographically get the benefit of those large companies. But that doesn't necessarily benefit the large companies. It's just they're lucky that they live there, you know?
Yeah.
Because they didn't decide where they were born. But on your first argument about, if somebody makes X amount in a city and then somebody else is competing for the job that they had, I don't really have a good argument for that. I mean, that does suck, but I would argue that the fact that a couple cities in the United States have way more income and higher cost of living isn't correct, in that by opening up the economy where anybody that is able to work remotely for any company can work remotely actually helps what's the expression, high tides raise all boats or something like that. You know what I mean? Like if everybody is able to compete globally or regionally, then those, that's going to help the economy as a whole, where it would just help those local cities previously, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think, to that point, exactly that. Like, now you're spreading those types of jobs to places where traditionally they weren't there because the companies didn't exist. And so then you have people in those communities now contributing to that local economy, you know, purchasing, you know, higher end items, doing more for their community because they're able to. Now they have a higher income level. They're now raising their community up to the level that maybe is, you know, a little bit a larger city. So now they're raising that level of the economy where they are simply by having that opportunity. And like I said, I don't think you can say, okay, all of a sudden all San Francisco employees, you're now making, you know, 20, 30% less. I think it's more of a, yeah, location always plays into it just because of the nature of it. It's just, what is the driving and deciding factor? Like, what is like the ultimate like thing that is deciding? Is it the talent? Is it the job? Or is it location? And so, and I think often companies lean more towards the location of saying, well, and because the way it cuts for people in the Midwest is the you know, detriment of saying, well, hey, look, we can pay them less because they live out there, even though the quality of work and the type of work is possibly higher, because let's say you don't have a 30, 45 minute commute. So you're able to work, you know, better hours. You're able to, you know, get more output from those employees. So really, you should be paying them more if you really looked at it, based on the output that they have versus someone who's getting paid, you know, 20, 30% more just because they're in a city that the cost of living is at.
And they can't even afford to live well at the pay that they're getting.
And that, I think, is the deeper problem for sure. Right.
I mean, if we talk about San Francisco, I have some friends that have lived there, and I think they had like a 600 square foot apartment, and it was $3,000 a month. I mean, do you know what kind of house I could get for $3,000 a month? It would be a mansion.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my point on some of the other stuff with the, you know, here's my receipts to show you I'm qualified for the job. Because not everyone has the funding to keep pushing certs or college educations to that level. So basically they're screwed. Versus on the flip of it, though, your receipts doesn't...
But...
Well, hang on. Personality can go a really far way for some... Because technology can be taught to most people. And that's just how it is. As long as they have the right guidance and the right materials, they can make it. As long as they have that personality to want and go. So in that small area where that person may not have had that opportunity, they'd just be crushed because there's so many people that have parents or guidance. It's like, hey, we're going to dump money into college and you're going to smash it. Right. So you're pooped on. There's really nothing you can.
But I think that's true of wherever you live. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't every there's inequality for sure. But I don't think that this would change that. I mean, you're arguing that people might not have enough, you know, certs or things on their resume, but that's not true today either. Like, if I moved to San Francisco, I mean, I've worked for a company whose headquarters was in San Francisco, but they had an office here in Kentucky. They just paid me less than they paid people in San Francisco, but I was still competing. You know, some of those jobs, they open them up to all their locations, but you have to be in an office. So I was still competing with people that were in San Francisco. And so I don't know if that's entirely true, but then also just assuming that is true, if you don't have, you know, qualification A, B, and C, in the form of some kind of paper degree that you got or certification or whatever, it's still true that if you, maybe you can't get that job right now, but if you go work for some other place and you have X years of experience and you can show that experience, that compensates for you not having those paper qualifications. I've worked with plenty of people who had, I think my VP at my previous job had a degree in anthropology, and he was VP of engineering. So,
and it depends on the business. It depends on, like,
greatly.
Yeah, you can't do, like, for instance, there's a lot of consulting and stuff like that. That would be like, okay, we only sell our engineers by having these specific certs or these specific degrees. And I only say a lot of this stuff because I'm one of those people that do not have a lot of paperweight behind me. I don't. And had a.
But you have years and years of experience.
But I got lucky. And
people can see that on your resume.
But I got, yeah, you're right. My experience is what outshines all of that. However, if I started off competing against everyone that wouldn't allow me to get into that spot, and that's what I'm saying. I only got in because of that, because the market was so small.
But you wouldn't be, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't apply to be a senior security analyst.
No.
Right out the gate at, like, Apple or something like that.
Right.
You end up, I mean, maybe you do. If you've gone to school and you're smart as a whip, you know, you can do that. But you build your career at each position. I mean,
yeah,
you did that. I, on the other hand, I stayed at the same place for like 11 years. So and I did that because there wasn't really many opportunities that I felt like I wanted to take. All the opportunities that I wanted to take where I was feel like I would be passionate about the product or the company, those weren't where I was. And so I found a place and I stayed there. But I think that, I don't know, we're just like going back and forth. Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, competition is good. It's good for the employee and it's good for the employer. I didn't say this earlier, but I was thinking maybe not necessarily established businesses, but future businesses. If you want to start a business, you don't have to think like, oh, I need to be in New York. I need to be in, you know, LA, San Francisco, Seattle. I can start my company wherever and I can hire employees wherever, as long as we're on, I guess, a decent, you know, similar time zone. And then that saves money for that company. So maybe you'll see more small businesses start up if there's more of a talent pool available to them.
Yeah, and don't think...
Where there might not have been in their city.
Yeah, and don't think I'm being defensive on it or anything. I think it's a good debate across the board.
Yeah, no, it is a good debate.
And
I was going to say, just two... A lot of companies are dropping their requirements for like a degree, especially for like getting in the door. Like a lot of companies do not have like college degree requirements. A lot of it is experience now, which is good for me because I don't have a degree.
I just really?
I don't have a degree.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Mind never blown. Finished. Yep. And I don't have any certificates either.
We've got a diverse group of information. What's a information knowledge workers? We've got a diverse group of knowledge workers here because, yeah, I went to school, got a master's degree, and then stayed at a place forever. You don't have a degree. Adam I know you went to school and you got a degree, but you're in more of IT, or I'm in like development, and you took contracts and you went to a bunch of different places where I kind of stayed in the same place. So it's interesting to have these three similar but different perspectives on this.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's where like my mindset always sits into it, is like I'm all for giving the little person a chance regardless of whether they've been able to invest or not.
Absolutely.
And I'm still paying off those investments.
Yeah.
So I'm the little person as well. So don't rule me out.
This is why we need to invest in things like technical schools and things like that.
And NFTs.
And NFTs.
And lottery tickets.
We need technical schools that aren't extremely expensive.
Yes, of course.
We need schools that aren't extremely expensive. Let's winnow it down to that.
Yeah, go ahead and just say school shouldn't be as expensive as it is. Even kindergarten shouldn't be.
Yeah. We're getting outside of our topic area, I think. Education system.
It's good stuff, though. It's good stuff.
Next time on Diversion.
Yeah. So, any closing thoughts about that?
I was going to say, just in closing, I think I'm excited for a hybrid work environment. I worked from home fully for a couple years, and that was nice. But it's also nice having the option to go into the office every once in a while. So hopefully the company I work for, it sounds like we're going to go more towards hybrid. So it'll be nice to have the option, just because the only other person in that office on my team, it's one other guy. So it's like, it's nice to have lunch with him in person, and that'll be cool. But you know, we don't have to see each other every single day, and it'd be good to be with the family.
Agreed.
Speaking of pivots,
I was going to say, and you know, speaking of great time with family, you know, there's nothing better than Disney to have some good family time.
Yeah.
Right, Adam?
Yeah. Disney is definitely one of those places that, I like to go with my family whenever I get a chance, because it's a good getaway. However, Disney as a whole has been making some different changes with the market going with COVID, et cetera, which, you know, before I get into what I'm saying, some of the stuff actually seems like it may have been plans prior to COVID. COVID just may have made it a little bit more sensitive, but there, I believe the announcement is 60 plus stores possibly closing by the end of this year. And these are the actual Disney, physical Disney stores throughout the US. And most people know that they've already closed a lot of them. I don't know the number count prior to. And then obviously they had their 32,000 employees that they've let go due to COVID. But it seems like the focus is to hit more at home on the Disney shop, the online piece, and then hitting some of the stores at the actual resort/theme parks. Now, some of that stuff makes sense because they've put up these pockets inside of like Target, right? If I don't know if you guys have been into a Target that's had like the Disney store.
Yeah, I've been into one of those. Yep.
No, I haven't seen that. I was actually in a Target, I think last week, the first time in like a year.
Yeah, so it makes sense in some capacity, because I guess you're not paying the employees for it and you've still got your merchandise out there to grab. And
you can pay people remotely to develop your store.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you go to the park too, it's crazy the amount of money people spend at the theme parks, and they'll spend money on things that may not be worth what they're price tagged at, but because they're there and they're collectibles, their value is in a sense raised. Right. But in the mark of that, they're also doing a lot to enhance the park, especially the Disney World in Orlando. They've got so much. They're going through like Guardians of the Galaxy. They're going through Tron, the one that was basically in China. They're porting maybe an exact replica, or maybe it's just based off of what's there in China. They've got like a whole Ratatouille area they just added in Epcot. It seems like Epcot's getting the most love, to tell you the truth.
Epcot was pretty sparse the last time I was there. Like for all of the improvements and new things that they had put in other what do you call it? Other parks.
Yeah.
In the park, Epcot seemed like the most untouched and original.
Yeah. Dated.
Yeah. Dated. Yeah.
And some of their things that they have there, in my opinion, are a little hidden. I've been there a couple times prior and didn't even notice. The last time I went, I was like, I had no idea these rides were here. I didn't know that this whole greenhouse thing was here that you could ride through. There was the Figment ride that I didn't know was there. And sure, it's probably
because it was a figment of your imagination.
Right.
But just,
I mean, I'm sure a lot of it was just because the park itself is pretty big. There's a lot to walk around to. And with COVID, it was very, very different. They had mazes set up because they're doing all this construction and such that you were kind of forced to see some of these things. But there used to be an area where you'd go to the inside out area with the paint and stuff, and it was extremely boring. So it's cool to see that they're putting all the love into some of these areas, but I think that's their big pivot, is I think they're trying to refocus in on their theme parks, try to get more traffic in, try to make up where the loss is, and then put everything else online.
I think this is extremely smart with the timing of everything. And like, I know that a lot of the, especially the park upgrades at Epcot and stuff, were like slated way before COVID, but the, and a lot of experts are saying post COVID, like, it's going to be a party, right? Like for quite a while. And I think people are going to want these experiences. And so I think, like, I mean, we're already planning a trip, you know, in the next year, year and a half, of getting our kids to Disney for the first time, because it's going to be like, let's go all out.
Yeah.
Because we've been, you know, stuck in lockdown for so long. Like, let's go for it.
It's going to be so busy.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
absolutely.
It's going to be
miserable. Last week, I think they hit park capacity for each one.
Wow. Okay.
Do you mean they raised it to normal capacity or?
No. It's still like 35%.
Okay. So they hit the reduced capacity for the first time.
Yeah. Which, okay. I went in the beginning of December last year, and it didn't reach capacity yet, but it was really hard to enjoy the parks because of COVID. COVID made it to where, like, Disney does an excellent job of following the requirements and keeping it safe. It was awesome. Like, I felt safer there than like going to a Walmart or Target. But the thing that did suck was like, I want to go into this shop. Well, this shop has a line outside of it with the max capacity that could be inside of it, and it takes 45 minutes to get in there. And, you know, that made it rough because you're used to waiting to get on a ride, but you're not used to waiting to go into a restaurant or a shop and stuff like that, which, as you know, when you go to Disney, you're trying to plan out to get on as many rides as you can, right? So when you put a shop in there, now that's part of your event, you know? It makes it difficult, and there's no fast passes. So I'm one of those that I'm ready for the COVID thing to be over and hit theme parks. I'm ready to just go nuts because I've been stuck in a cage basically. But I think you're right. I think it is a good time to do it because everyone is going to swing back. And I think we talked last week about how some of the video game companies were like, hey, you know, we might see a decrease in sales because everybody's going to want to get outside now.
Does Disney World have, it's been a while since I've been there, do they have like some kind of like virtual line that you can wait in, like on the phone?
Yeah. So at Disney World, I don't know much about Disneyland.
Did I say Disneyland?
No, I think you just said Disney, but either way. So at Disney World, Rise of the Resistance, as of right now with COVID, you have to get into a virtual queue in order to ride the ride. However, I think that would be an excellent idea to do for all of their rides because it opens up the opportunity for people to go and shop. So if I go ahead and if you're pivoting and you're wanting your theme park to make money off of your products there, set that up because then you can go buy food, buy toys, whatever it is. And then, hey, it's my turn to get on this ride. and set you up, or even the next ride. You got your day free instead of staying in line.
Yeah, maybe you like go and like check in or whatever, you know, like to show that you're there.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work, but at that point, then you got to have a virtual line for your store. Virtual lines everywhere. Disney is a line simulation.
Well, maybe without COVID, though. You know, without COVID and the capacity is not as much of an issue, you know, it probably would be seamless.
Yeah, their FastPass system is like the only way to go. When we went, like, man, if you didn't have FastPass, it would be so hard to ride some of the rides. Because like you said, you know, you're waiting in line for some of them. Like some of the popular ones, you're waiting in line like 45 minutes. But they make that a good experience too. Because I remember like the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, like that line was crazy long. But like every few feet, they had some kind of like toy or like interactive display or something that the kids could like play with to keep them entertained, because kids have short attention spans and don't like to wait in lines.
Well, that is one thing I will say. So the first couple times that I went to Disney World, we didn't ride it unless we had a fast pass, an exception of a couple, right? And that was because capacity and trying to make sure you hit them all. However, when we went recently, no fast pass, so you had to go in the standard lines and such. But I tell you what, the stuff that was in the regular line versus the fast pass line was a lot cooler, because what you're saying, like there's stuff to interact with, but visually there was more stimulating things versus the, if you always do the fast pass, you never get to see that cool stuff.
Yeah. I think I'll take the fast pass though.
I mean, I would agree. But it is something like on some of those rides, like, the Flight of Passage, the Pandora area. If you do the fast pass, you don't see all the cool stuff of like the science lab and all the things of that nature. And me being someone who really likes FX and studio level practical arts, like that was a big thing for me. I thought it was really neat. But I don't think there's any word yet of when fast passes are coming back. And the 50th year anniversary is this year for Disney World.
I think the fast passes will come back when they have full capacity. There's no reason not to, because I'm sure they make a killing off of the cost of those fast passes. Yeah.
But yeah, that's all the news I've got right now for Disney World. What do we got for our electrical side of the house?
Tesla. So,
Tesla.
Yeah, a couple. I think it's been maybe 2 weeks at this point. A YouTuber AI Attic had the full self-driving beta 8.2 for Tesla's hands-free, fully autonomous driving system, and they took it through downtown Oakland, and I'm telling you, it was pretty bad watching the video. Like there was an occasion where he's driving and he turns on the turn signal and the car knows that it needs to get into the left-hand lane, but it's not sure, or it needs to turn left, but it's not sure like which lane is the right lane, and it can't decide. So it just drives on the line between both lanes. And there was a couple other instances. I didn't end up watching the whole video, but there was a couple other instances where, it would like jerk towards the sidewalk or another car, or, you know, it's impressive that it works at all, but like, don't let people test beta self-driving software out in public. It's dangerous. I mean, you don't let pilots like test beta software while they're like toting around 200 people on an airplane.
Well, I don't know why you would let him use this, or was this like a hacked?
No, this wasn't. You can install the beta. Is what
good
I'm
grief
is aware of. It's like, I believe it's $10,000 or $5,000, and you get the full self-driving whenever it's supposed to come out. But you can install the beta if you decide that you want to do
bad.
It. So, yeah, like a normal consumer can be like, oh, I want the full self-driving stuff. And, you know, they're like sitting there using it on the expressway, and then their car veers into the column. I mean, that actually happened. I mean, that actually happened to somebody, I think, and they died within the last year, where every day this guy's car would go past this certain spot on the freeway, and it would like yank a little bit to the left, and he would like catch it, put his hands on the steering wheel, and the steering wheel would take over, and he didn't hit it. Well, one day he wasn't fast enough or wasn't paying attention, and it slammed right into the median and killed him. So, for years, Tesla has been saying that, oh, we're going to have full self-driving level 5 autonomy. Like, you'll be able to tell your car where you want to go and you won't have to do anything, but it's all been a big lie. And I think that this like video, if you ever questioned it, will show you that. And if that's not enough for you, then Tesla's associate general counsel, Eric C. Williams, told California's DMV in a letter that both autopilot and full self-driving are, quote, currently neither autopilot nor full self-driving capability is an autonomous system, and currently no comprising feature, whether singularly or collectively, is autonomous or makes our vehicles autonomous, Williams states. So, like, for years, Elon Musk has been saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have full self-driving. It's going to be amazing. You know, it's going to do all these things and, you know, take you everywhere and you won't have to worry about anything. But when the rubber hits the road, their lawyers say officially, no, that's not true.
I mean, yeah, they're definitely covering their butts.
Yeah, but you can't market one thing and then come out as a lawyer and say another thing. I mean, it's like a cigarette company, you know, being like, oh, see how cool these cigarettes make you? And then the lawyer's like, yeah, they don't really make you cool. They could give you cancer.
Well, that's kind of what they did do, right? Like, for all those years.
Exactly. And there were repercussions from it. But like right now, Elon Musk can do no wrong. Let him build us some rockets and public transportation in a tube. No.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest problem with the way that they're doing this is exactly letting normal consumers drive this on busy roads. Like, okay, if you want to install it, don't let them use it unless they're at a track or, you know, that kind of like a place where there's not going to be pedestrian traffic because they want to try it out. Personally, I think it's a good idea, and we need to test it out to work out the bugs, and like, but a professional needs to be working out those bugs.
Yeah, see, that's my hold up with this whole what was it in episode 1 or 2 when we talked about the flying taxis being completely autonomous stuff. That's exactly where my head went. It was like, man, this is gonna be like a power line or something stupid, and the weight of my butt is going to pull it down just enough that it clips one of those things. And it's all bad news from there on, you know?
How heavy is your butt, Adam?
I mean, it's probably 90% of my body.
90?
No, I'm joking.
You just look like a giant pin cushion with a head and a couple arms. So yeah. I pulled up Tesla's support article for full self-driving computer installations, and it tells you how to install the upgrade for the full self-driving computer upgrade. So you can do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, definitely everyone should check out these videos. There's a couple where in the clip the car just goes the wrong way. Like, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and on the software, it shows like what the computer or what the car itself sees, so you can kind of like figure out when, you know, it knows what it's doing or why it thought a certain way. But like, yeah, like, don't give this to normal people. Like, Tesla should be paying employees to drive this on, like, I don't know, simulated roads? Like, can you, like, I understand why they have to have this, like, beta tested out in the real world, because the real world is where it's gonna fail, but it's too dangerous. Like, just think, if every every automotive manufacturer had a full self-driving initiative, and they all decided that we're gonna let every customer beta test our full self-driving software, and every single car on the road was like that, there would be so many more accidents, I think, because the cars would, like, freak out.
And the problem is, the other manufacturers aren't going to do that because they learned a long time ago you don't do that. Like, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, and I really think that the only reason that Tesla gets away with this is because they're so small, like, as far as the car market, where they can fly under the radar of Congress, where if every car manufacturer was doing this, then it would be, like, a more prominent deal, where right now it's like, oh, only if you can afford a $60,000 car are you able to be this dangerous.
Hey, I would love to have an electric VW's new one. Love it. Want it. The Rivian looks nice, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
dude,
Rivian.
That show I watched, they're awesome.
The Long Way Up?
Yeah, dude.
Oh,
those,
yeah,
killer.
Yeah.
And those were the freaking cool beta. Like,
well, here's the thing with the Rivian that I didn't like. Did you see where he accidentally honked the horn with his knee?
Yeah.
They put the horn down, like, well, by your knee.
That's because that's what they did for their all of those buttons are not on the production model.
So the horn's not down there?
Yeah, all of that stuff was because they were running behind schedule and they, like, wanted to get that part of the documentary. So, like, a lot of the things are not at all part of the production. Which we should cover the Rivian, because I think Rivian's pretty cool stuff at some point. But yeah, that's a lot of that's not. The part that I thought was crazy in that show was when he didn't park the thing and it rolled back. Oh my gosh.
I didn't watch that many episodes, so I guess I haven't seen that part.
Oh, you need to watch it all. Dude, at one point, like, he gets all excited and, like, jumps out and forgets to put the parking brake on, and it rolls back and nails a huge rock and just totally mangles one of the pieces underneath one of the motors on the rear wheel.
That reminds me of the time that I took a day trip to Yosemite National Park, and the young girl that was driving the church bus made my palms sweat the entire time, because the edges of the road have no guardrail, and it was like 200 feet down.
Oh, that's scary.
Well, what's really scary is before we had gotten to that point, we stopped at a gas station. And the girl gets out to fill up the van, and she didn't put the parking brake on, so it starts to roll backwards. And so that really shot my confidence for the rest of the trip.
Man, that's like how I feel whenever I see people smoking at a gas station.
Those are the kind of people that put beta versions of self-driving on their car. I'm going to check this out. Hold my beer. Look, I can drink while it's driving. Check it out.
Oh, no. Drink responsibly.
Leaving it all in. Yeah. So, that's all I have to say. Tesla scares me. And now, Tesla doesn't scare me. Elon Musk scares me. He's a sweet-talking technologist that makes a lot of promises. Anyway, before I make any more enemies... I don't know how to segue to this. Ryan, somebody did something fun with Tenet.
Yeah, maybe on a lighter technology note. Something I thought was really funny. Has everyone seen the movie Tenet in this call?
I have.
Okay. So, you know, it was pretty cinematic of a movie. Well, if you ask most people, including Nolan, he will tell you that the true way to see Tenet is to watch it in the theater, which most of us couldn't do last year when it came out. And so it was like, okay, man, like, that's great. And partly, you know, they were probably trying to say, like, why ticket sales weren't great. And, you know, everyone just seemed miffed about it. Great movie. Love the movie.
Yeah. I was miffed about it because he's telling people to endanger themselves and spread disease to go see his movie. And I love all of his movies. Like, they're great, but that was dumb.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny how everyone's just being all snooty about it, like, oh, you have to see this movie. Well, a YouTuber thought that as well, and so he decided to go ahead and make the worst version possible, and he scaled it down to fit on Game Boy Advance cartridges. And so the limit per cartridge is 30 minutes of video to be watchable. Like, that's like the best he could do. So it's split across five different cartridges, and the bit rate is 8 kilobytes a second with a resolution of 192 by 128.
You know,
so
like, what, sometimes like when you read these things, you're just like, what was going through that person's head at that point in time? You're like, you know what, I'm gonna put that on the Game Boy.
No, what it probably was is they didn't have the certs to get the job that they wanted.
So
they decided to put this on a Game Boy and put it on the internet and be like, look at my skills. I can edit video.
You're terrible.
Yeah, look at you.
You're terrible. You. No, this was legitimately like in response to everyone being like, you gotta watch this in a movie theater. And he was like, oh yeah, well, how about this? And but yeah, it's more of a fun, you know, a fun project to see. It's one of those like, can I do it type things.
Yeah.
There's special cartridges that you can buy, and in the video it shows he had to modify them, the special cartridges that you buy to load, to actually fit in like proper Game Boy Advance cartridges. But it's pretty bad. You definitely, like, it's barely watchable. Like, they show some clips and there's just no way you could watch any movie, really.
When I saw it, what it reminded me of is when I think it was when like Apple like trailers first came out, or like QuickTime trailers. You know, you could watch a trailer for a movie on QuickTime on your computer, and they were like tiny, like postage stamp size videos, and you couldn't really tell what was going on, and everything was all compressed.
A real video.
Was so amazing. Yeah, Real Player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I felt like. It's like the colors aren't exactly perfect. It's so interesting.
Was it the DS or the 3DS that put Netflix on there? I remember that being kind of like,
oh yeah, and it was like, oh no, trash. Really?
Yeah, it was one of those two.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty funny.
Maybe it was YouTube. I can't remember what it was. It was some video streamer, and I remember being like, whoa.
That's funny.
You know, I was thinking, like, what kind of device could you put this on that would be smaller, like screen-wise? And I was like, oh, well, you could play the video like on your Apple Watch, and that would be like super small.
Oh,
but you know what, though? The resolution of this is probably way, way, way better than the DS, so it would probably actually look good.
Yeah, it'd probably look fine. Just, well, it would be 4:3, right? So,
well, you could letterbox it.
Yeah, you'd have to.
We're not talking about Justice League here.
That's right. Snyder would love you for it.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought this was fun. It's just, I don't know how anyone has this time on their hands to do something like this, to like sit there for hours and hours figuring out different encoding settings to get this down. But hey, you know what? More power to you if you do. And it's a fun little use of technology.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this week. I did want to remind everybody that in 3 more episodes, we will be discussing Neil Gaiman's The Eternals in our media club. And so if you want to grab a copy of that, you can check out the link in the show notes. And that's an Amazon affiliate link, so that'll help out the show. Yeah. So thanks for listening, and say goodbye, everybody.
See you next week.
See you later.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.